Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Well, it's been about a month since Silicon Valley Bank's collapse created panic across the country. The bank was largely known as a financial backbone to the tech industry, but SVB also has a significant stake in a niche market, wine. For nearly 30 years, Silicon Valley Bank built its wine division with a portfolio of clients, both large and small, that numbered into the hundreds. And the bank's collapse, as well as the financial uncertainty that followed, had ripple effects across California's wine industry, which, no surprise, is the most lucrative in the country and among the top in the world. Silicon Valley Bank has now been acquired by First Citizens Bank, which provides much-needed relief and stability. But for a 101 on what makes the wine industry financially unique, we have invited our very own wine expert, New York Times bestselling author Rick Cushman. Nice to see you again, Rick.
Good morning, Vicky.
Okay, so your knowledge of the wine industry from small to large goes back decades. When you first learned about Silicon Valley Bank's demise, essentially, did your experience shape your initial reaction to the news?
Yeah, I mean, my first reaction was, asterisk. You know, it's, you know, I knew that folks were going to be super nervous and for all kinds of complicated reasons. And that we're saying, you know, agriculture is its own world. And then wine is its own world inside ag. And SVB was really the only bank that understood like all the little vagaries of what makes the wine industry so unique and so tenuous, too.
Yeah. I mean, given that you say that SVB is the bank for the California wine industry, why did that even begin? Why did Silicon Valley Bank begin to carve out this unique wine division nearly 30 years ago back in 1994?
Well, it goes back to one guy, Rob McMillan, who's founded it and has run their division forever and loves wine. And so part of it was him understanding that this was this cool, unique business. And you know, for people can remember back that far, you know, wine was really just starting to grow as a big deal in America back then. But, you know, Napa and Sonoma and the Central Valley and all those places were starting to bloom. But what makes them unique was that they understood all of the vagaries of it. They had specific financial instruments. And by the way, I love saying that word because it makes it sound like I know what I'm talking about, which I don't. You know, that were designed for all of the things that they do. And I mean, we could break it up into small pieces and big pieces. But the large look is, you know, income comes in slow versions, whereas the money goes out in huge chunks. The money doesn't come in for maybe 4 years or 6 years or 8 years, depending on how you do it. If you plant a vineyard, you have to wait 4 years before you even get grapes. And then those grapes have to become wine, which is another 1 to 4 years. You know, meanwhile, you've got all these expenses piling up. And then if you are a different kind of a winery, if you're a winery that, you know, that just buys grapes or buys juice, makes it and sells it, you have one kind of financing. If you're a winery that builds everything, that has its, you know, the vineyards and the wine machines and the tanks and the barrels and the distribution, then you need a different kind of money. And whether it's a long-term loan or lines of credit. And so all of those things are a place to start. And the other part is that they understood wine. They understood what wine was valuable because ultimately that's a big part of their collateral. So if, you know, if somebody doesn't know what the value of a $100 bottle or $200 a bottle a cash of wine versus somebody who's got larger amounts but less value, got to be able to price that too. And so all of that makes them very unique, and they learned it, you know, because of this one person's passion, but also because they could see that it was growing.
So wine grapes, they're part of the broader agricultural industry. Why specifically does the wine industry need a bank like Silicon Valley Bank as opposed to more mainstream financial institutions?
Well, let's just say you're starting up. What makes it a difference? Well, you've got large capital costs. All right. So if you're starting a farm, you also have a large capital cost. You know, but if you're planting an annual crop, you know, than you get at the end of the year. If you're starting a laundromat, you open the doors, you start making money. Not enough, but, you know, and if you've got a restaurant, well, restaurants have their own crazy flows, you know, but then, you know, you've got to build your market. So, you know, all of that stuff is super hard. You know, if you are, you got to buy barrels, but you have to decide what kind of barrels. And then, you know,
And the price can range.
And then you get your grapes. And then, now you got to decide what you're going to do with them, because you think you may be making Cabernet, but then you realize that you need something else. You need to put some Petit Verdot in there. So now you got to go buy that Petit Verdot. Or do you plant it? And then, you know, so you have these expenses that continue to roam. And the money comes in not really at any one point, sometimes in bigger bits and then smaller bits. And so, you know, there's all those sorts of things that make it really more complicated than so many other businesses. You know, and then each kind of wine, like I was saying, each kind of winery is a different animal. You know, a large winery has a different funding need than a small one. If you don't own your vineyards, then you need to buy wine or buy grapes. And so then you have a different need. If you do own your vineyards, well, then you need to care for them. So now you have labor costs that you didn't have otherwise. And each segment of the industry and each size of the industry is part of it. And that's just getting started. And then, you know, from there, it gets more complicated, too.
Yeah, it's kind of like they offered a boutique service to the wine industry. And what I also thought was interesting, it's not just, you know, financial investments, but they also offered kind of like financial advice. They had an annual economic outlook on the state of the U.S. wine industry. How significant was this to supporting their clients?
So that was huge because, you know, if you think about it, the wine business, unlike many businesses, even a restaurant, is so connected to the vagaries of the whole world. You know, the trends in Europe can then affect U.S. wine. The trends in U.S. wine can affect Europe. The amount of bulk wine that's available in Chile might affect the amount of bulk wine that's available in Spain, that might affect the bulk wine that's available in the U.S. So if you're somebody small, you do not have the resources to know that sort of thing. Plus, you don't have the resources to know what consumer trends are, really, especially, you know, if you're one of our friends in the Foothill that sells 2,500 cases a year out of your tasting room, you know, it's hard for you to be able to measure what's going on with consumers, what tastes are changing, you know, where people are going. And so they supply that service. But if you're a big winery and you also have your own your own people, then it's another benchmark. It's a way for you to validate your own numbers to be sure that you're going. And what Rob McMillan did was and then Silicon Valley Bank was, he had two things going. One, they had this cache of information from all of these years dealing with all of these wineries. He had the trust of the industry. So people would tell him things. When he did his surveys, you know, how many surveys do you get from your own employer? Will you give them, not that you would do this, of course, to your employer or me to mine, but other people might, where you give them really quick answers, right? As opposed to really detailed answers. But people gave them detailed answers because they knew the value of this. And then people outside of the industry also trusted them so that then they could get information. So it made it a very unique and a very valuable resource.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned also when we were talking ahead of this segment that there were even people from the bank that would actually like help with production as well.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there are
like
many wineries.
Roll their sleeves up and get a little dirty.
I'm sure there are many wineries that would tell you that this never happened, but there are plenty of the smaller folks who, you know, started with them long ago and who make either good or interesting wine or just stayed involved. And there would be, you know, there's Adam Lee, is a rather famous winemaker in the Sonoma area who created Siduri, which is a great Pinot place, and he later sold it. But he talks about that, you know, he didn't know how to do this. He didn't know how, you know, he went from, this is very typical, he went from custom crush, which is you rent space at another winery and they make your wine. So you either grow your own grapes or buy your own grapes. And in this case, he was choosing his own grapes, and he had, you know, vineyards that he worked with. and then he'd bring it into the custom crush facility and he'd buy them. So he has a certain kind of expense. He needs to buy the grapes, he needs to rent the facilities, and then he needs to distribute. But that winery outgrew him, and so he didn't have a place to go. So he decided he wanted to build his own winery and build and get his own vineyard. Now he's got all these capital expenses in the middle of already running a business. So then they know how to do this. So that's where they work it out with a Silicon Valley bank. And now, and those and the SVB people, you know, felt an investment in him, not just financially, but sort of emotionally. And he talks about how they would come and help with harvest, and they invite them to taste various wines. And I've heard more than one story. I know his because his has been in the news a lot. But there's more than one wine that had the same stories. But then they, you know, that investment is when they can. They show up and crush. They work the sorting tables or whatever it is. You know, you're taking out twigs and extra things like that. And it really helped in a way that you don't see, you know, in many other industries. Now, let's also, there's not a lot of other industries where people want to be as emotionally connected. You know, people love having their hands in the wine business. So there's a little bit of that going on, too.
Yeah. How significant was the wine division to Silicon Valley Bank's overall portfolio?
Well, that's fun. The funny part, it's like 2%.
Just a sliver.
Yeah, but having said that, they had like $1 billion in loans out. But, you know, so on the one hand, Silicon Valley Bank the wine division was small, but it was also a huge prestige point. And it was huge to the wine business, obviously. And, you know, it made people very, very nervous. And even though ultimately there were no financial consequences for most folks, you know, now they're nervous. They're worried about lines of credit. A lot of, you know, I've been hearing from folks who have now opened up new accounts at other banks just to have another line of credit. So there's a lot of that kind of going on. But there's another side thing, which is that because of the wine, I mean, I know that SVB is the reason for this, but there's a lot of tech buyers of high-end wines. So the small wineries in Napa and Sonoma, and maybe some of our friends in the foothills and Lodi, and certainly down the coast, these really elite wines that sell at really high levels, a lot of their customers were the tech folks who could afford it. Now, was the connection to the Silicon Valley Bank? In some cases, yes, but in some cases, no. But the failure and then the nervousness and a lot of people lost some money. That it also reduced the customer base for some of those small, really high end wineries too. So that was kind of one of those ripples that you wouldn't normally think about, but it's pretty significant.
I would just imagine in the first days following that announcement a month ago, I mean, there must have been just such a high level of uncertainty and fear and even kind of scrambling, figuring out what to do.
Yeah. And in that case, the wine business was not unique because everybody's going, can I make payroll? And remember, the assets were frozen for like 3 days. But even then, you know, if you've got a check that if you're trying to make payroll on Monday and you can't get to your money, and the wine business is a bit unique from, say, some of the tech businesses, which is that the wine business has a lot of lower income help. And those are a lot of them are folks who live paycheck to paycheck. And if somebody, you know, so now their employees are nervous about getting their money or don't know they get the money or didn't get it for a day or two, you know, there's nowhere they can go for money. So, you know, there was that ripple. Fortunately, it didn't last long. And so that was, you know, they were open by Monday, if I remember correctly. And so there was like a day or two lost, but and certainly 3 days of fear. And then, of course, lots of fear after that, where folks are still questioning, now, do I continue that investment? You know, people were in the process of maybe selling a vineyard or buying a vineyard or buying bulk wine. And now credit's gotten more expensive. I mean, this isn't just unique to the wine business, but, you know, for the folks in the wine business, they for a while there was this feeling like I'm not on solid ground and credit is getting more expensive.
Hmm. What I'm learning from you, though, it's not just that line of credit, what Silicon Valley Bank offered to their clients who are part of the wine industry. I mean, they did so much more. So what else was lost, you know, that is difficult to measure with this bank's collapse?
Well, luckily, the loss is probably going to end up being minimal. But what they offered was so unique, which is that understanding, you know. And, you know, it's get back to like the vagaries of the business. So starting is hard, growing is hard. For example, in the wine business, you know, if you are a restaurant and then you want to open a second restaurant, there's like this second layer of fixed costs that you know. You know, if you are you're making a product and you want to sell more, then, you know, you can make more and sell more. But the wine business, because of the nature of it and the nature of distribution, the nature of selling into stores, the nature of the the alcohol laws in America. We have to know them, for one. And they're different in every state and can be different in every county in some states, is that you can't just grow from, say, 5,000 cases to 7. That's a difficult leap. You almost have to double, because the added costs of having not just new people, but new supply, a new wait time to get that wine out into the market and all those things. So, you know, there's almost like tiers of growing. And that's where, as again, SVB understood the vagaries of that too. And they understood that if you were adding to your market or starting a winery, you may not have wine in your hands for 3, 4, 5 years, but you're trying to go out and sell it before you actually have it. So that's a really complicated formula.
A tricky proposal.
Yeah. And so they understood that. They understood what that cost financially. They understood that, you know, every size was different and every nature of every winery is different. So that's the thing that made everybody so nervous, was that even another bank, a community bank or a regional bank or any of those folks that even in that area, but if they really didn't understand the wine business, that it would be much more difficult or simply much more expensive to borrow money.
Yeah, I mean, and given that, you know, in the immediacy, you know, the impact ended up being minimal, you know, a month after this bank's collapse. However, you're saying that the line of credit is going up in terms of probably the interest rate. And then I'm learning from you, it can take several years before you even see any money into your investment. And then it's really difficult to grow if you want to go from a small grower to a medium to a large. So what do you think the long-term impact is going to be, like maybe 5 to 10 years from now?
Well, as you were describing that, Vicky, I'm thinking to myself, the romance of wine, right? This is the part that really people don't think about. And there's that old line that if you want to make a small fortune in the wine business, start with a large one. Well, so the long-term impact might actually not be so bad. One of them is that by all accounts, First Citizen is very committed. And they have a lot of ag business. So the wine division is probably going to get as much support, maybe even more than it had. So there's that. Second is, now there's a renewed understanding of the value of what they did. And so they may get more people contributing to the annual reports. And they've been creating these sort of indexing reports, in essence, giving people sort of status reports of where things stand in the industry, you know, quarterly and various other things. And they may get more resources for that. I suspect that, you know, people getting in the wine business will be more careful now. So, you know, it's harder anyway. And your next guest is going to explain a little bit of that. You know, the wine business expanded like mad for 2 decades in America. And it's, you know, both wine sales and the ability to do that because of the value land available and is changing. And so what it may just be is that everybody's a little more cautious, maybe growth slows, but maybe growth slows anyway. So, you know, it's hard to know. The wine business, like everyone in America, and I got to go sideways here. Taking financial advice from me is like taking medical advice from me. You really got the wrong person here. But, you know, having said all that, you know, I think that the wine business, like everyone, you know, there's still this nervousness of the banking world and what it's going to do with the American economy and whether it does or doesn't have emotional impacts. And I think that's what we're seeing right now, both in the bank world. Once again, I'm not the guy to be saying this, but certainly in the wine world, where everybody is just sort of going, okay, you know, it's like when we get to a recession, everybody keeps their money in savings, where in theory, supposed to, a society spends its way out of recession, but instead we all hold our money. And that's, I think, was what this is looking like for the wine business for a while. And then the ripples of that is 5 years out, there aren't new expanded vineyards, because the new wine that might come on the market, maybe it ends up meaning is that the larger wineries do better. You know, the Gallos and the Constellations and some of those that make brands that we all know and love, you know, that we see in the supermarkets, maybe they take a larger share of the market for the mid-priced wines. Yeah. I think the higher end guys will be the same, and the smaller end folks will be very nervous and probably won't grow.
Rick, as always, thank you.
My pleasure.
Just a great perspective. That is New York Times bestselling author and wine expert Rick Cushman explaining Silicon Valley Bank's significant role in the wine industry before its financial collapse. You're listening to Insight here on NPR station, CAP Radio, and I'm Vicky Gonzalez.